welcome to Base Camp for Men. I'm your host, Tony Rezac. This is the show that gives you insights and resources on how to live a more courageous life. We'll be looking at men, the current state of masculinity, and how to create a more inspiring narrative for all men. Welcome, and let's get started. This episode is dedicated to all the parents out there, all the ones who got swept up in this transgender insanity, and all who are about to go through it. My heart goes out to you, and I hope this episode and the resources mentioned assist you in finding a healthy and sane path for your young person and your family. May God bless you all. Hello, Base Campers. I hope you're all doing well. Today's topic is a good one, navigating the transgender minefield as a parent who may not have an inkling about what the so-called quote-unquote authorities have in mind for your kids. I like what Dr. Miriam Grossman said when she wrote, quote, "I want the following truths recognized by everyone on the planet aside from gender studies professors and grad students until about 2 weeks ago to be acknowledged, that sex is not assigned at birth. It's established at conception," unquote. Oh, there's a movement afoot that tells your kids and expects everyone, adults and kids alike, to meekly follow. That whenever a boy says he's a girl, then he is a girl. And that whenever a girl says she's a boy, then she is a boy. Base Campers, they're coming for your kids. Are you awake yet? There's a cult-like crusade that targets them 24/7. Let's be clear. To indoctrinate children and young adults with falsehoods and drive a wedge between them and their loving parents is evil. To encourage them on a path that leads to harm is evil. And to describe it all as a journey to authenticity and to entice children with glitter and rainbows is evil. To echo last week's sentiment with Dr. Mark McDonald, child psychiatrist extraordinaire, schools cannot be trusted. They are a major site of indoctrination for the transgender ideology. And before we get to today's excellent interview, I want to read you a quote by the great author J.K. Rowling, who has been a very vocal critic to all this insanity. She said, quote, "I don't believe that even a 14-year-old can truly understand what the loss of fertility is. At 14, I would have said that I don't want children, but motherhood has been the most joyful, wonderful thing in my life," unquote. She goes on to say that the best cure for gender dysphoria is to let children go through puberty, and I couldn't agree more. And now, on to our sponsor and our guest. Today's episode is brought to you by Stand Up Now Apparel. Stand Up Now has amazing designs centered on God, family, freedom, and patriotism. They use only the softest cotton in their designs and have gear for the whole family. There's something for everyone, Base Campers. I know you're going to love their products. Go support them at www.standupnowapparel.com and use the code BASECAMP to receive a 10% discount and free shipping. And now, on to our interview. My guest today is Pamela Garfield Yeager. Pamela has been a licensed clinical social worker for over 20 years. She's been an op-ed contributor to the Epoch Times and is the author of an important new book titled A Practical Response to Gender Distress, Tips and Tools for Families, geared for families who are trying to make sense and skillfully navigate the gender issue. Here is my interview with Pamela Garfield Yeager. All right, I am here with Pamela Garfield Yeager. Author, therapist, thought leader, Pamela Garfield Yeager. Pamela, welcome to Base Camp for Men. It is great to have you on the show.
Hi, thank you. I'm honored to be here.
Yeah, you know, I found your book. I was clicking on a bunch of stuff around the trans stuff, and I'm like, I want to do a couple of episodes about this. I'm having parents and friends either wrestling with this issue or may wrestle with it in the future. And I found your excellent book, A Practical Response to Gender Distress, Tips and Tools for Family. Great job on that, by the way. You did a great job writing it. I think it's going to be read all over the place, I hope.
Thank you.
Yeah, and I guess my first question is just give us a little bit about your background and what had you write the book.
Yeah, I have an interesting background. I'm a licensed clinical social worker. I just moved, but I've been in California for over 20 years. That's where the bulk of my experience is. I actually got my degree in New York City. I started my career in New York, doing home visits and working in the inner city and community-based organizations. So I've had this whole range of experience working in inner cities in Manhattan and the Bronx. And then I moved to California and I started more working with foster youth and mental health agencies. I did IOP, PHP. Those are programs for adults and teens with severe mental illness. Usually after they've been hospitalized, they come to a program like that. And then I became a clinical supervisor, working in mostly school settings in elementary schools and high schools. So I was a clinical supervisor. And that's my background. And then I actually had to take some time off from my profession because I had a disability that knocked me out of my profession from the years 2017. And then I came back in 2021. It's still in the thick of the lockdowns in California. And I came back to this part-time job, per diem job at an IOP program. It was for teens and adults. So I was afloat, they call it. You know, I worked in both age groups. Mm-hmm. And with the teens, you know, half the kids were trans and the adults were going along with it. They were all masking, of course. They had saw no problem with it. There was no fight. And that was kind of what woke me up to how much everything had changed over those years. There was the vaccine mandate in 2021. After I'd been through this entire health odyssey, I was not comfortable taking it. I honestly was not political about it. I probably would have taken the vaccine if I hadn't gone through my own personal health issues. Yeah. So my husband struggled with the vaccine, and I didn't want to go through that after all the pain and suffering I had been through. And so I was forced to take it or leave my job. So I became the truthful therapist and decided to speak the truth and say the things that I know my colleagues were afraid to say.
That's great. You know, you and I have similar, we were in similar camps, but I really admire your courage to do that. I didn't have as much to lose. Like, my job was threatening me to fire me, but they never did. I kind of called their bluff. I'm like, I'm not getting it. I didn't really wear the masks a whole lot. So I was shouted at the grocery store stuff, but it was all in all, I just had my microphone. I didn't have as much to lose as somebody that's like, you know, like somebody in your position would like, we're going to can you if you don't get it. You know, that was a real, stack of risk reward for you. And a lot of people were like, well, if I'm going to be fired, I'm just going to get it. How bad can it be? But I think it was a lot worse than people really thought it was. You left California, like you and I were talking before this, you have a similar kind of trajectory. I was a liberal for 30 years, a tolerant liberal. I don't care if you're gay, lesbian. I don't care about any of that stuff. Like, you do you. You know, yeah, I was pro-choice, but they didn't give me choice about the vaccine. Like, what happened to like my body, my choice? Like, all I was saying, like, wait a minute, I honor your body, your choice by giving you a choice of what you want to do if you get pregnant, right? Even though my views on that have changed a bit. But when it came to my body, my choice on an experimental shot that I wasn't comfortable with, because I was like, I don't know if they've really properly tested this thing. They were shouting at me that I was the problem, that I should be in a re-education camp, that I should be fired, that I should not be able to travel. So there was all this hypocrisy. And then when they rolled out all the trans craziness, that was part of me going, you know what? This group is not mine. It has been hijacked by a crazy mentally ill group that is got – you know, they just got some weird ideas about things. I mean, arguing that there's no such thing as male and female, all this stuff was not triggered in me. It just had me start to go, I can't stay here. This is not philosophically in line with me at all. And I found myself moving what I thought was more libertarian. It was actually also more conservative in my views. I don't know if that resonates with you at all.
Yeah, 100%. That's very similar. My big epiphany time was in 2020 when George Floyd had died and everyone was posting those black squares. Yeah. And they were having the mostly peaceful riots. Yeah. And they were calling to defund the police and call the social worker. Well, I'm a social worker.
Yeah.
And I actually have some martial arts training, I'll admit, but I'm not a large woman, and it's not appropriate to have me come in to handle all these things that I know that police handle. And I've worked with severely mentally ill people, as I just said, and I worked hand in hand with the police. I needed the police to keep the patient safe and to keep myself safe.
Yeah, absolutely.
To keep all the other patients safe, to keep the community safe. We needed the police there to be able to get them into the hospital and, you know, get them what they, the help they needed. So when they were saying to defund the police, to me, that was a wild, wild thing to say. So that was my wake up. And then, of course, seeing how everybody was in lockstep with it and no one was allowed to question it. And like you said, all of this hypocrisy. And then, of course, all of the COVID lockdowns and, you know, how they say they care about minorities and people, you know, who are struggling, but yet they're the ones that were impacted the most by these policies. They're the ones that were losing their businesses or not able to work. The people who were doing just fine were all the people where I was living in Silicon Valley who could just work from home and just be fine. Yeah. And the people who had regular jobs, they, you know, they were not essential and they lost their jobs. And of course, all the children, that's what I was watching the most. Was bizarre to see how they thought it was okay to lock children down, have them stay at home from school. We know so many kids just didn't go to their Zoom class, which is a ridiculous concept anyway, but and it's, you know, of course, the minorities and the people that have less resources were impacted the most. And these are the people that we're supposed to say we care about. That's when I really knew this is all a load of blank.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, and then, you know, the one of the heartbreaking things for me in that whole social engineering thing was when I would go down to the park and I would see the preschoolers, there'd be like 20 of them in masks, you know, these little 2 and 3 year olds. And I'm like, and I know the school was trying to keep them safe, but I was just like, oh my God, that is terrible. Like, what kind of impact is that going to have on their development, on their worldview, on their trust of the world? These are young little ducklings that thrive when they trust that they're safe. And you put a mask on them and tell them to keep that on, even though they don't like it and they can't breathe. It says there's something going on that's not trustworthy. And that does some messed up things to a developing young person, especially young, you know what I mean? So,
yeah, they're telling children that their breath, that their air, that if they breathe, that they're killing other people.
Yeah.
What kind of message is that to tell to young children who don't have any frame of reference?
I know.
It blew my mind. There were days where I cried about it. I would see little kids out walking with masks, and I did actually break down sometimes. I was that emotional about it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, so let's get back. So the transgender thing, like, how did it blow up like this? Like, you know what I mean? Like, it was one thing, you know, when we were younger, you know, there might be a cross dresser, right? Like, it's like, oh, okay, no big, he likes wearing dresses. That's fine. I don't have a problem with that. That's his kink or whatever. He feels like he's, you know, like there was, you were just kind of like, okay, you know, that's what, and she likes to be called she. Okay. I don't have an issue with that. But now, like, I don't want to say, I live by this area called Vashon Island. It's a small island. And man, did they hit that hard with the transgender pressure. I want to say nearly half the high school kids are trans.
Wow.
Like right around 50%, which is extremely high. But my question to you is, how are the numbers this high? Like, what is happening? What are they reading? What kinds of, you know, is it TikTok? Like, why are they wanting to do this? Like, what's driving the you know, them wanting, all these teens saying, I want to be a different gender?
Yeah, I mean, there's so many factors that have collided. And like I said, I was on disability. So in my profession, I wasn't there while this was really growing. I think those were the years that it was, the institutions were really infiltrated by this ideology and taken over. And I think there were several people that did try to speak up, but were made examples of. So there became this false consensus. So within the institutions and the medical facilities, then the people who were against it were afraid to say anything, or they just sort of did a different population or something like that, because they just didn't want the friction. But in terms of what wants, there's so many influences, and it's interesting. I still can't even wrap my head around how much stuff there is, how much propaganda, I'm sorry, there is for these children to believe that they're trans, or believe that their life will be better if they're trans, or believe that this is a cool thing to do, or that it'll fix their problems. It's everywhere. I mean, it's everywhere for you and I to see as older adults, you know, not teenagers, but then it's in all these other underground areas. It's in the video games. It's on the Reddit boards. So as you know, obviously you'd mentioned, you read my book. So I've been following Amazon and looking at, I've been ranking my book the most in this category of teen LGBTQ books. Mm-hmm. And so I look at all the books that are surrounding my book ranking. Usually I'm like around 10 or 11, and all the other books are these disgusting, vulgar, very hypersexualized books about being trans, or so many different books that give that message. And then of course the schools have been indoctrinating kids. They've been teaching them you could be this like gingerbread unicorn, gingerbread man, or gender unicorn. There's all these different messages that say that you could be a boy or a girl or something in between or something else. And essentially what queer theory teaches is that your body is a vessel and it's inconsequential. So you have this sort of gender spirit that's different than your body. So I think a lot of people, when they say there are only two genders, or you know, they're not matched with reality, they don't recognize that this is really a spiritual belief, a transcendence to them. And so you're speaking a different language, and that's why there's a lot of clash. So they're teaching little kids this, and they're believing that they're more enlightened to believe that what's inside of you is different, or can be different from what your body presents. And so they could believe that they're non-binary, or they're some kind of animal, or they can be some, I don't know what the trend is right now, but you know, all different kinds of identities. And the ones that really latch onto it are usually the more vulnerable ones, the ones that are maybe autistic, or the ones that have some trauma or have family issues. Mm-hmm. So that's really why I feel so passionate about it, because I'm seeing the vulnerable populations getting targeted, being marketed to.
So they're kind of hijacking that kind of uncertainty. I think what you were just saying makes me think that male and female, it's kind of vanilla. It's not sexy. It's not glitter. Exactly. It's not glitter. You're never going to be a unicorn being a girl, right? You're one of them.
Boring het, sis.
Yeah, and it's like you
lame duck.
If you really want to have the magic, if you really want to have the glitter and be somebody special and get all the attention and the accolades, because that's the other thing, is like if somebody goes, you know, I was thinking about, you know what, I do feel like I'm a transition. I do feel like I'm a girl and I feel like I'm a boy. You know, they just celebrate it. It's like, oh my God, here's another special person. And so it kind of preys on that part, that insecure teen that we all were, right? Who wanted attention and didn't want it at the same time. Like, so self-conscious and narcissistic and insecure at the same time. I do like it when people applaud me. That validates my budding self-esteem. And maybe they're not getting self-esteem from school in other ways. So this becomes an avenue for that. And it's like, it makes the whole thing even more kind of disgusting to me that they're preying on the insecurities of young, you know, teenagers and preteens and kids, they're going after the Achilles heel, which is, you know, they really are starved for attention. They want to feel like they're special. Well, here's a way to be special. You could transition and then everybody's going to love you. But they don't ever talk about any of the other, they don't talk about the reality of it. It's only this like, get in the door and get a standing ovation. The rest you're going to have to deal with later. And we're not going to tell you about what's coming later. I wanted to mention, you had mentioned in your book, there's a transgender, and I love it when I hear older transgenders that are saying, slow down back there. Because
Buck, you're about to say Buck. He called Buck's is first, I'm going to say he, but we know Buck's a woman.
Yeah.
Buck refers to himself as a transsexual.
Transsexual, that's
right. To really differentiate.
Yeah, that's great. And then so I wanted to read the tweet that you had. So he had tweeted, quote, "You have to work hard on being trans daily and come to terms with the fact that you are presenting as male and you are not male," unquote. And he's, I just love that he's, and he talks about how difficult it is. The physical and emotional challenges that they don't talk about in that honeymoon phase that they're trying to sell these young people, that it's all going to be glitter and unicorns and magic for you as soon as you step through here. Nothing bad awaits you. And like Chloe Cole is another one. It's like the honest transsexual or transgender calling back saying, "You guys, please slow down. Please take my tweets seriously. Please don't. I know I'm going to get thrown under the bus, but there's wisdom in these, because you and I can call it out, but we're just boring old cisgenders, right? We're who are we to talk about these?" But when they pass through it and then say, "Look, I have regrets about it," I think that is the most powerful wake up, and that probably could lessen this trend almost more than anything, the more honesty we get from people that are speaking about what happens later.
Yeah, Buck is interesting. I like Buck a lot. Buck actually is one of the people that kind of helped me break out on the scene. I was on Buck's YouTube channel like 2 years ago, and I got a lot of exposure from that. Really appreciate that. We had a really good conversation. And Buck does present as though this is really the right choice, and you know, it helped Buck's life. The pronoun thing gets trippy.
Yeah.
as I talk, if I sound awkward here. But then I saw that tweet and I was like, even someone who's saying this was the right choice for me, even someone who's saying it has said that this saved my life, still has tweets like that. That really does show that there's a leaking of, there's still a struggle. Buck has been honest about a lot of the physical struggles. I don't know if you know this. I think I did put it in my book. That Buck almost died of sepsis.
Yep.
Because he had, it's weird, he had an infection in his the uterus, and had to have an emergency mastectomy. Mastectomy. What's it called?
Hysterectomy. Yeah.
I'm getting all the words mixed up. Emergency hysterectomy. And so, so this quote unquote saved Buck's life, but Buck also came really close to death,
right,
and was maybe lucky in that case, but plenty of other people aren't so lucky. Uh-huh. And I don't think people realize just how dangerous and risky all of this stuff is. And the hormones especially, they're just destructive. They're really destructive to the body.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Well, and you had written, I was surprised at this. You had said that there was a strong connection between autism and transgenderism. I was surprised at that, because you had pointed out that girls are more apt to want to be transitioning, but I always think of autism as is more male.
Yeah.
And I could be wrong. I'm so naive. And I don't deal with, I'm not up in it the way you are as a therapist. I just watch it from, you know, as an observer. But I always thought it kind of made sense that more girls were wanting to transition. I'm like, I don't know, that intuitively, that kind of makes sense. But when you said the autism thing, I'm like, I thought autism was more male, had more boys had autism diagnosed. But I could be wrong. I wanted to ask you about that. Like, I was surprised there was a connection with autism. And I just wanted to give you a chance to talk about that just a bit.
Yeah, there is a large connection to autism. Even the people who are promoting affirmation and transition would say that. In fact, I have it in my book, there's a flag. Actually, I didn't put the real flag in there because I wasn't sure about copyright, but I put a stock photo of a flag with the autistic. I don't know, I'm mixing up words today.
Okay.
The autistic symbol, it's like this infinity symbol, and that represents autism or neurodivergent people. And you're right, that autism typically is more male, or I think it the population has more men in it, but it's growing, and that's a whole other podcast about why that population is growing. I have some ideas about that. So plenty of girls now are also at least having traits of autism or really struggling socially and just trying to figure out how to fit in. And the trans thing becomes a really easy way to have a little bit of a social script and a built-in network and a little bit of a shield when you don't know how to interact with other people or you feel so different. And this is sort of a solution to that or a belief system. So for one, yes, it is more male. There are more transgender identified girls, but that is also shifting. There are more boys now. It's still more heavily girls, but there are more boys it's happening too, because of course they're getting more marketed to now than they were in the past. And there's a lot of influences on that. There's so many different flavors or different types of people or reasons why people fall into wanting to be or believing that they're trans. And so there's the more social contagion type, which I think the girls are much more susceptible to because that's, you know, their temperament. And then there's the ones that are looking, have like issues with their sexuality, have been really exposed to pornography, perhaps are looking for accolades and figuring out their sexuality. And the boys tend to fall into that category. Mm-hmm. So there's so many different categories. In fact, there's a whole chapter in my book with like 25, 30 things that influence kids to want to be trans. And that wasn't even a complete list.
So
there are girls that are autistic, for one, I think more than there used to be. And I think it's just that population is just expanding in general.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, finish the thought.
I was like, some people are self-diagnosing themselves with autism that aren't autistic. So there's that element to it. I think there is an over-diagnostic element happening. But I do believe that there are more kids who have autism now. And, you know, people have lots of theories. Of course, one is the vaccine.
I would, Pamela.
Vaccines, we'll just say that.
Pamela, I would make a sizable bet that 40, 50 years from now, certainly in 100 years, right?
Yeah.
They are going to look back and go, what in the hell? Why were they pumping kids with mercury, formaldehyde, aluminum? Why were they injecting them? And why did they think that was good for them? Like, you know, you look at it on the surface, you're like, well, to me, it's, you know, I mean, I've read enough of, you know, Paul Thomas's books and just like, but it's not even getting educated on what's in a vaccine and what it does. No. It is literally common sense. It hits you over the head like, duh, look what's in these things. These can't be good for people, right? And then I know people that are purebloods, like not just COVID, like their parents are like, we're not giving you those shots. And they are the healthiest people. Like they're literally like the most, these guys are like, you look at them, you're like, you know, they're like, oh, I never get sick. Like, I don't think asking their brother, have I ever been sick even once? You know, like, you're like, good God, like, that's what it looks like. And, you know, I used to be like, well, those early childhood ones are necessary. Now I'm like, you know what? I'm not even so sure about those. I think
me too. I've questioned all of it. I don't have all the answers.
No,
I just have a lot of questions. Yeah.
Me too. And I do not, I don't, I would suggest, I would have a two or three different books that I would point expectant mothers and fathers and just say, just read this. I'm not telling you what to do, but this is really good information on, you know, your child's health. And so, you know, that's kind of a whole nother podcast, but it's a whole other podcast. When you were saying what's causing autism, like I got some ideas.
I have some ideas. I'm like, I'm not sure if we want to get into that. Yeah. I don't read it cover to cover, but I have read some of the book Turtles All the Way Down. Are you familiar with that one?
I just did a podcast about 4 weeks ago with the editor Zoe O'Toole on it. We just did a deep dive on it. So yeah. Turtles All the Way Down. I love it.
Turtles All the Way Down.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that one, my eyes had already been open, but that really gives you a lot more facts. It really shows you how these studies that they say that they've done that have promised all the safety are really none of what they promised. So
it's a sham.
And this is beyond the COVID stuff. I hope I don't get you demonetized or whatever from all
no,
this.
No, no, no. It's good, man. We let it rip, man.
We can rip. I never know.
You can cuss. You can rip. You can go riffing on something. It's all good on this show. So, and yeah, but we both know, you know, that there's just too much. I mean, I regret getting my own son, even those early ones. You know, I got pressured. I was not as awake back then. And we had a quote unquote good pediatrician, and she just pressured us. She said, if you don't do these vaccines, I can't be your doctor. And so we're like, well, shit, I guess I have to. And now I look back, I'm like, damn her. She strong armed me to do something that my gut was telling me, can we slow down? Why does he have to get all these at once? You know? And she's like, I'm the doctor, you know? And I'm just like, damn it. I just wasn't quite, I wasn't quite informed yet. Turtles All the Way Down wasn't there. Paul Thomas hadn't arrived. He hadn't had his awakening. So there's just there was less material for people like me and parents. And now I think there's a lot more. And I think more and more parents are going to be like, you know what? I'm going to skip this. I think we'll be all right without it, you know? And so, which brings me to, you know, I love that you had written in there that during the COVID mask and stuff, you said you did not see, quote, not an inkling of rebellion, unquote.
Yeah.
And this has been this, as my listeners know, that I have bitched and moaned about this. Like, I was just like, why did I feel like I was all alone in Seattle? I know it's woke here. I know it's blue, you know, and I'm an outlier. But everybody, there was just this mass delusional psychosis where everybody's like, I don't know. They just walked a lockstep. The doctors, the freaking like the teachers are walking lockstep with the woke. And then just how much of a courage problem do we have? You know, it reminds me a little bit, the transgenders, a little like we're going along with it. Like we're,
it's very much the same. I think that's why I included that in the book, because it's going to turn some people off, because I know certain people are really focused on the gender and they don't see the wider connection to how we are as people, that we're followers and we believe in experts and we don't always think things through on our own when the crowd is doing something. And I felt like the masking and the things that were happening during COVID were very connected to what's happening now with this gender explosion. So that is why I brought it up. I was shocked, honestly, even though I shouldn't be. I thought I went into this job as a social worker. I thought we were supposed to be these social action people. We're supposed to help injustice and help with society when we see problems. But no, my profession is full of followers. My profession is full of doing everything that they're told to do. And I really, that was my biggest epiphany, was just what followers people are. I didn't know that when it came to something really serious like that. I've never lived through something that like that in my lifetime, and probably none of us have, where you see everybody do something that is destructive and just keep going along with it because the experts say, because their TV tells you, because Dr. Fauci said, because their boss says, even though like I said, it made me cry, but like seeing, we knew the destruction that it was going to happen. But I think a lot of people didn't stop and think about it. They were living in fear. There was this collectivism mentality, you know, for the greater good. And it was just like our American way, just our American spirit just got lost. And and I was a liberal before that, but no longer, because I thought what liberal meant was you fought and cared for people who are vulnerable. You're not supposed to just make them do things that are harmful to them that they don't want to do.
Right. Well, and it was in surprising communities. Like, there's a lot of yoga teachers here. And my good friend Janelle, I'm like, the yoga community is not going to go lockstep with the vaccines. And she goes, oh yes, they are. She was literally the only one that didn't get the shot. Like, all of them were like masks, you know, that wouldn't meet in person. All of them were vaccinated multiple times. I'm like, I thought yoga was like health and trusting your body and your immune system. Like, what happened to the baseline philosophy? You
Very
know,
strange, right?
They just threw it out the window, said, no, we're liberals. We're lockstep with everything else. We're woke too now. And it's just like, wow.
It really taught me something, because I thought we stood for something. I thought the liberals stood for something else, even when push came to shove.
I know.
And I figured that out. That's not the case.
They caved. They caved. They didn't have.
Some people believed in it too, though. There's a mix. There were people that really believed in it. I remember my office mate, another social worker, when I took my mask down, she yelled at me because she was afraid. I mean, she said, "I don't want to get sick. You got to put your mask back on."
I know.
And I was like, well, you're going to get sick either way. The mask doesn't work. This was already in 2021. So we had the data that showed that the mask wasn't working. I kind of understand in the beginning. We didn't know, but then we learned. But people refused to look.
Yeah. You know, I saw in your book, you had posted a little poster from Gays Against Groomers. It was a Save the Tomboys, right? And it made me feel nostalgic because I grew up with tomboys in my working class town. There was always plenty of tomboys, but they weren't pressured to be boys. There were athletic girls, and some grew up to be lesbians, and some grew up to be heterosexual mothers. I remember I grew up with a girl who was a tomboy. What an athlete she was. Well, she had like five brothers. She was trying to keep up with them in sports and roughhouse. She had to be that way. Mm-hmm. And if you would have asked her, do you want to be a boy when she was 10? She probably would have said, yes, what do I got to do? Of course I want to be a boy. I want to really keep up with these guys. Well, now she's a beautiful mother of three, you know, and she says, like, thank God they didn't have this trans stuff when I was growing up, because I probably would have bit on it. And who knows what would have happened? And I would have never had kids. And, you know, so it made me feel nostalgic and like, God, that was, you know.
A lot of women say the same thing.
Yeah. And,
the Gays Against Groomers has been really effective because this trans movement has been hiding behind the gay movement.
Yep.
And the Gays Against Groomers they're coming out and they're saying, stop hiding behind us. We're not for this.
Yeah.
And what has been pointed out by several people, including Gays Against Groomers, is that the transgender movement is the real conversion therapy. We're taking people who are gender nonconforming, who are maybe tomboys, who maybe will grow up to be gay, and we're telling them that they should be the opposite sex and that to get hormones and surgeries and to sterilize themselves to be who they're supposedly supposed to be. Instead of basically transing the gay away. Have you heard that expression?
Yeah.
So that's what they're doing. They're transing the gay away. So all of this talk about being homophobic and all this, well, who are the most homophobic people? The people who are pushing this trans thing on kids that will grow up to be gay.
Right. Exactly. That's such a great point, you know. Yeah. And they're doing really good work, the Gays Against Groomers. You know, you had talked before we get to the book, and I just wanted to talk about the parents. It is so heartbreaking. I'm a father, and nobody has had the parents back in any of this. They got thrown under the bus. Imagine your son comes home and says, I want to transition. You want to slow down and pump the brakes and at least get him through puberty. And if the teachers find out, you know, the schools are actually in cahoots. California, you just left California. You're in Georgia. I'm sure you saw this. They just passed.
Yeah, just passed the law.
Passed a law, and it's on the ballot. I think here in Washington too, where they're saying, look, if a young person wants to transition, and the parents don't know, if a teacher contacts the parents and say, look, this is going on, the teacher can be sanctioned. The teacher can be reprimanded for that.
Yes, they're required to keep secrets from loving families. Yes.
And then the parents, if you don't go along with this trans agenda, you're seen as supportive. Your kids they can threaten to take your kids away because you're not supportive of this gender, you know, a therapy or gender, what do they call it? Gender affirming care. You're now against the child for saying, wait, I would rather my son or daughter get through childhood and puberty. And if they still feel that way when they arrive at young adulthood, say in their early 20s, then that's a different conversation. But can we pump the brakes? No, that's not allowed. And I'm so mortified by that, to think that parents would be demonized and set aside and against the child, and that, you know, the children are already naturally rebellious and they don't think mom and dad really know what's going on anyways at that age. I know, because I have a 17-year-old and he doesn't think we know jack shit.
That's the natural way. Yeah.
And it's like I welcome his natural, you know, F you guys. You know, like he's creating his own autonomy and his own identity. I get all that. But they're using the
exploiting that.
They're exploiting the Achilles heel and the natural kind of like rebelliousness to say your mom and dad are boring old vanilla cisgenders. They're not supporting your unicorn development, you know, Eddie.
I mean,
and,
you know, it's beyond that. They're actually telling them that your mom and dad are encouraging you to lead to suicide.
Right.
That
exactly.
You will die if your parents don't allow you to get this treatment that's, you know, in quotes there,
right?
You don't get this stuff to change your appearance, which will really sterilize you and create lifelong health problems and make you a lifelong patient and addicted to big pharma. So yeah, if your parents are concerned about your health, then they're a danger to you. And there's a chapter in my book, because I sat in undercover at a therapy training class in California Association of Marriage and Family Therapists training. And that woman who taught the class, she actually said, if you are working with a parent that doesn't affirm, that you should call CPS, Child Protective Services. That was told to me in the training.
That's terrifying.
Yeah, very terrifying.
I mean, what is your message to parents? I just had Mark McDonald, Dr. Mark McDonald on. He's a child adolescent psychiatrist in LA. He's saying to the parents, get them out of the government indoctrination schools.
Yes,
get them out of
I
there.
Agree.
He goes, I never used to say this. He goes, now I say it unequivocally. Get them out, because they're trying to take them away. They're trying to castrate. They're trying to do surgeries. They're trying to, reassign. He goes, it's insane. Like, get them out. It's better to not even have them in school than have them in there, because they're literally in danger right now.
Yes, they are.
They're
very much in danger.
Yeah.
I 100% agree. Mm-hmm. It's weird for me to say this as someone who is a school counselor and a supervisor of school counselors for 10 years.
Yeah.
But they're the most dangerous bunch, the school counselors. Now,
mm-hmm. Yeah,
because they're the ones that are pitting the parents against the kids and telling the kids that putting this idea in their head that they were born in the wrong body. Kids mm-hmm. who are vulnerable, kids who have all these other issues that we've talked about, and the schools is the place where they really are trying to destroy the family, destroy these kids.
Yeah.
There is an agenda. I sound like a conspiracy theorist for someone who maybe is new to this conversation, but I believe 100% that the government does not want the family to thrive. The government does not want kids to be autonomous and to be healthy. And they want to be they want to be the parents of the children. And you've heard the politicians say our children instead of, you know, they're talking about your children, and they'll say our children. And
absolutely.
That's not by accident. That's by design.
I agree with you
100%. They're after your kids.
Yeah. We could do a part two of this and really dig into what is behind this, because it is, I've talked about
various.
Karl Marx did not like humanity, and all of the philosophical, all the neo-Marxism that you see in the schools and the universities. I mean, a lot of it is they're products of this kind of Marxist destroy America kind of agenda, destroy the family unit, destroy traditional, and the anti-American stuff that's in the schools now too. It's like they're teaching stuff that's not factual, and that's, you know, they're doing a good job at dumbing them down. And now everything is about what we've just talked about. That's the whole thing, is like being tolerant of this particular Marxist offshoot. But we can get into that another time. I just so appreciate you taking time today. I just love the way you think and articulate yourself. Where can people find your book? You said Amazon. Is that where you prefer listeners to go get it? And any just last messages to maybe parents that are maybe wrestling or someday may wrestle with it? Is there a takeaway message from this? And where can people find you, your website, and your work?
Okay. Well, my takeaway message And I hope this comes across in my book too. I give a lot of facts and I give a lot of advice, but the really underlying message is for you to think for yourself and for you to believe in yourself as a parent. Mm-hmm. Parents have learned to outsource their parenting way too much. It's just in our culture that way. You know, all this parenting advice, it's online and all these different seminars, and they're always trying to look for answers outside of themselves. And I think we need to reel that back and listen to our own guts as parents. And I think we have more instincts than we give ourselves credit for. So believe in yourself, even when the teacher, the doctor, your neighbors, whoever else is telling you that you're doing something wrong. If you believe strongly that, you know, if, for example, you don't want your child to be sterilized in the name of gender affirming care, believe in yourself. So that's my biggest message. And, you know, you can look for answers, but always question. And where can you find me? So, I have a website, thetruthfultherapist.org. On there, I actually have some online classes that you can look at and download that just have more broader things about mental health and how it used to be before it got, you know, ideologically captured, and to understand how, if you were looking for a therapist, what would be some things to look for so that you know how to advocate for yourself and your family. So that's all in there. To find my book, yes, it's on Amazon. The book's called A Practical Response to Gender Distress, Tips and Tools for Families. It's actually, I haven't advertised this, but it's actually on Barnes & Noble's. I need to post about that because I finally got it up on Barnes & Noble's too.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
So it, for those maybe who are international or don't want to buy from Amazon because they think they're a bad company, I don't know if Barnes & Noble's is any better, but that's another option. So it is on Barnes & Noble. You can search for it there. I forgot what the other questions were.
No, that was it pretty much. Just where can they find you? That's great.
Yeah, I have an Instagram, which is at @the.truthfultherapist. I have a Substack that people might enjoy that has a lot of short articles. It has some ideas, some thoughts, and also things that I've been up to, like times I've testified, things like that. And that is a Pam, the Truthful Therapist at Substack.com or whatever the URL is. And then I have a YouTube, which has some, just a lot of my Instagram videos in there and other videos that are a little longer, which is at the Truthful Therapist. My Twitter is Truth Therapist. So those are a few places to find me.
Beautiful. Well, Pamela, thank you so much for coming on Basecamp for Men and sharing your insight and your wisdom. Just great to sit around the fire with you and kick the tires on all these important topics. You got a really great outlook. And I think you're really helping parents make sense of this very confusing topic. So thank you so much for coming on today and making time for us.
You're welcome.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that conversation as much as I did. When we were done recording, Pamela mentioned a great documentary that she participated in called Gender Transformation, The Untold Realm. And you can find that at www.gendertransformation.com. That's www.gendertransformation.com. Pamela mentioned all the ways you can find her, but once again, her website is www.thetruthfultherapist.org. Thank you, Base Campers, and we'll see you around the fire next week. If you find value in our show and wish to show us some love, we are now making that very easy to do. You simply go to www.basecampformen.com and click on Donate Support Basecamp. You'll find an easy way to make either monthly donations for as little as $5 a month, or you can donate just once. We love the monthly donation and hope to build this up over the coming months, but any show of support is greatly appreciated, honestly. Thank you for your support and for helping to keep Basecamp as a resource on your hero's journey. That's our show for today. Thank you for listening. Men, good luck in all your endeavors, and good luck on your hero's journey. This is Tony Rizak, and you're listening to Basecamp for Men.